Hello, and welcome to this podcast from Consider This. Please let me know what you think and tell others about us on social media. This podcast was originally broadcast live on Northumberland 89.7 FM. You can hear this show live every Friday at noon. Thank you for downloading this program, and I hope you enjoy it. Hello and welcome back. This is Consider This Northumberland, and I'm your host, Robert Washburn, and you're listening to Northumberland 89.7 FM. Coburg is booming. If you ask Coburg Mayor John Henderson, that is what he would tell you. And he has proof. All kinds of development is taking place, both residential and commercial. A number of companies in Northam Industrial Park just renewed multi-year leases. Lots of initiatives are going on, from revising the official plan to supporting local businesses. There is another side to this story. The cost of housing is skyrocketing. The average home in Northumberland sells for more than $800,000. Rents are going through the roof, and finding a vacancy is next to impossible. The harbor needs $12 million worth of work, so it doesn't fall into Lake Ontario. Heritage buildings are under threat, facing uncertain futures. And a major chunk of real estate is opening up at Brookside. It could transform the town. So there's lots going on in 2022. And just to make things more exciting, it is a municipal election year. The mayor will talk about all this and more. Here is that interview. It's so nice to see you again, Mayor Henderson. Welcome to Consider This.
Well, thank you. And it's always great to start a new year.
I want to begin by asking you, how would you characterize the past year for Coburg Council?
Well, it certainly has been an active, busy year. I think that goes without saying, just with our number of council meetings, special council meetings, public meetings. On average, I think they've been somewhere between three and 5 hours each. We've handled a lot of agenda items in all elements through all departments. So to say active, I think, would be an understatement. And I'm very pleased to say that, because when we're in a COVID-related environment, I would sense that most people would think it would be the complete opposite. But again, that could not be furthest from the truth. It's probably the, since COVID, I would say the busiest term I've experienced in my 10 years on Coburg Council.
In a recent interview, you said Coburg was booming, and you argued new growth doubled during COVID. You pointed to residential and business development and the spate of new lease agreements in the Northam Industrial Park. But the Northumberland Association of Realtors paints a different picture. It says in the past year, it saw home sales drop, and there was a modest gain in home sales from the previous year of 3.1%. It also said that the overall inventory of homes has shrank to an unsustainable level, and I'm quoting them there. This has resulted in a skyrocketing house prices, with an average price of a record $828,000 on average. That's up nearly 30% from 2020. Right. How do you balance those two points of view?
Well, I can only go by typically what's happened in our downtown core. I know in the last 6 months, we've opened up 18 plus businesses of different types, either because they've enlarged, they've chosen to expand, or they're relatively new. Similarly, we've opened up a number of new businesses in what I call the Strathy secondary plan area up in Elgin Street. I know in terms of Northam Industrial Park, we signed our major players and have new players in the park. And right now we have approximately about 1 million plus square feet of operating space that is operating today with staff in place. And I know in terms of Lucas Point Park, we've made agreements to bring new businesses to Coburg once their establishments are built, or the next 1 or 2 years, where they'll relocate those new jobs or move jobs to the Coburg area. So again, that's what we're seeing. as we're seeing this influx, I mean, let's not keep that Coburg. I realize there's significant house prices, but they're not much different if you move to Brighton. They're not much different if you go to Wellington or any other part of Ontario. There has been a huge escalation in costs. And as a result, it has changed the dynamics and it has shortened what is available, what we would consider a fair market value in past. Tell me a community that can offer a fair market value that we knew in past, because my answer is you're going to have to either go way north or something well beyond Wellington and Picton to find it. It's a matter of supply and demand, and unfortunately, we're suffering from that same fate as other communities are as well.
I'd like to come back. There was a lot in there. First of all, let's talk about new business. You talked about new business. How many businesses, though, on the other side have closed locally? So to give us a better picture, what has been the net growth or net loss?
I don't have all the numbers, but I know our net growth has been more significant than the loss. And because as we've lost a business or it turns over, then we have a new proponent. We'll need to come in to try a new service or a new venue. It's not to say we haven't lost. The three that come to mind that are significant, someone might say, well, we lost the Matterhorn restaurant, but then again, we only lost them because of years of retirement age. When we lost BB's, I believe after, I'll say at least 90 plus years, I know it's higher than that, that's because they couldn't find anybody in the family and they wanted to retire. And it was the closure of BB's and hopefully to be used for, depending on who would like to use that space and negotiations, perhaps a newfound service or business to go in there. So yes, we've lost some businesses outright, but when I look at the number that have come in, it has far exceeded the empty lots and businesses we're aware of downtown.
I want to talk some more about housing, and in particular affordable housing, because it seems to be remain a crisis despite multiple efforts to create more units. And if you're looking for an affordable home, as we were talking about house prices, the county has a 10-year waiting list for affordable housing. And I know the numbers of projects are underway and there are some on the books, but it seems that barely that council is really moving the needle on this issue. Now, other than the projects that are underway, what is council doing to make a major difference to help counteract these skyrocketing house prices, the incredible rent that one has to pay in Coburg to live here?
Well, you're absolutely right, Robert. I mean, we're doing everything we can, but you're quite right. The pace that we're working on is probably the best pace we've had in a number of years. But to your answer, does it meet the demand? My answer is nowhere close to meet the demand. This kind of initiative should have started 30, 35 years ago, both from the federal and the provincial government, in my opinion, from a national housing strategy, which did not happen. But maybe perhaps in a good news story, I mean, we have the construction of Boulder in Coburg with 71 units, of which 14 will be affordable. We, through the county, redeveloped what we call the Elgin Park Street Development, where it moved from the current 18 units. When it's fully built, it will accommodate up to 40 units on the same site. The county has purchased, I hope I have the address right, I think it's 473 Ontario Street. They just got through dealing with their memorandum of agreement or understanding, which is an agreement between their Thumman County Housing Corporation Board, Habitat for Humanity, and Aboriginal Ontario Corporation, where they will share the new build that will be done on Ontario Street of 62 units. Again, it has to yet to be designed and built. So when you combine these with the work that's being done at the county and social services and affordable housing units that are constantly being maintained or improved for the betterment, and then when you look at our own CIP, We're doing the best we can, and we've done a lot, I believe, as a council. But if you're asking me, is it truly going to address the magnitude that's before us, knowing we have a wait list of close to 10 years, the answer is not. To do this, we actually need, in my opinion, a national strategy come down, both from the federal and provincial government. And I hate to say this, it's going to be attached, has to be attached with $1 billion kind of bill to allow us to meet these growing needs within our community. These needs are not just Coburg's. I mean, they're throughout the entire Northumberland County. And when I talk to my colleagues and other mayors in different areas, they're suffering from the same fate.
Before we leave the topic of housing, I just want to talk to you about one more thing. And up until January 14th, there was only one warming center in all of Northumberland County. And it was located in a church in Coburg. And it was only overnight. As of January 14th, though, the town has opened a warming center. And up until then, there was nothing during the day. Now, I'm sure if someone who is living outside because they are homeless, there may not be a lot of difference between minus 10 and minus 20 degrees, which I understand is the threshold. Minus 20 is the threshold before you open a warming center. In fact, it was minus 23 degrees Celsius on January 7th. Now, and again, nothing was open during the day. Can you explain why there is not a line item in the town or the county's annual budget to pay for a drop-in center that serves both day and night so that people are not being left out in extreme weather, both in the winter and the summer?
Well, Robert, you make a very valid point. I can only say to your point, effective today, working with CEO Vaughn and the team of staff, the town of Coburg did step up effective this morning and opened up the CCC Center for the day element starting today at 8 a.m. and it will go to 8 p.m. Where we can help them with facilities, warmth, some degree of care, what we might say at least a roof over your head during that time period. We've already made arrangements with Century Transportation. They've donated their services to transport individuals who may want and wish to be relocated back to a particular church on the main part of town that is open and has access from 8 p.m. to 8 a.m. And working with Chief Vandergraaff, he's made sure that when they return on the bus, a warm meal will be ready for them upon the return to this particular church. But with all that being said, I can tell you that your point is well taken. We operate and the county operates at a very high level of HISIS and putting great plans in place, ensuring team performances, ensuring H-court matters and people are dealt in team performance. And my answer from a high level, that's fantastic. That's the pathway we want to go down in the future. But you're quite right. It doesn't address the individual who's out on the street this morning and says, well, where do I go and where can I go and what services? So I'm the first to agree with you that the county, in my opinion, and I'm part of the county, we have to do a better job in the future to ensure we're just not supplying care from evening through the night, but we really need to reframe how we look at vulnerable care, whether it's a cold day or not. And so it's your point to have some kind of center that people can go to, that can depend upon, I believe is critical. And I am hoping the county will seriously look at this because we know the need is within our community. I mean, that was proven today.
Looking forward, a proposal came forward about using Brookside for purposes of providing shelter or temporary shelter in the near future. Can you bring us up to date as to what is going on there and what possibilities there are with that proposal?
Well, I have to tell you, there was no proposal that I'm aware of. What I am aware of that Council Bureau put a notice of motion, in other words, perhaps to bring that discussion to the floor, from last Monday's meeting that was withdrawn from Councillor Bureau. At this point, I can tell you there have been no talks of Brookside on that regard whatsoever, because Brookside right now is still under the ministry umbrella. We have not had any direct meetings since November, December, where I'm still waiting to hear through Mr. and Minister Piccini as to will the ministry work from one ministry and adapt it to another to use Brookside in another manner, or will they be having truly future negotiations through their IO department with the town of Coburg? So at this point, I'm awaiting Mr. Piccini's update to our council. He's agreed to come forward on January the 31st. But I can tell you there have been no discussions on Brookside whatsoever.
Let's talk about the budget. There was a lot of energy put into this year's budget, a 2.9% net increase for the town's portion. And at one point in the process, council was looking at a 4.1% increase. Now, while there is a demand by some in the community to keep taxes down, there is also a responsibility to address the needs and the issues the town faces in the long term. With all the projected growth, how long does council think it can keep taxes down and yet provide the services we need both now and in the future?
Well, I'd have to say, Robert, from my perspective, because I'm sure you may get a different perspective from the deputy mayor or other members of council, but I thought council did a great job in balancing COVID-related items, the additional construction cost value index that we're dealing with. Our materials are ranging anywhere from 10 to 17%, depending on the item you're purchasing. So at the same time, I thought we did a great job in identifying capital projects that we have to deal with and balancing the infrastructure along the way. As you know, we have a number of capital projects that we would do continuously. We try each year to do an annual street or a number of streets to reconstruct those streets. And if I'm not mistaken, this year on the docket is Blake, Victoria, and Burke. And so they will be done in the coming year, very much like we would do all streets. Similarly, we understand our sewer system has to be identified, and that must continue because what we don't see underneath, it has a lifespan as well. In the budget, you will note, I believe we committed to $1 million for the next 3 years to ensure that that infrastructure is improved and enhanced. And we also learned with the new subdivisions recently, we did a great job in creating in the last many years what we call water management ponds for the right reason, for natural infiltration. But what we didn't do, we didn't keep a good handle on the management or the risk management of those ponds. So now we have a plan going forward that, for example, the most recent pond I think we were dealing with was the Terry Fox Pond. But to deal with these ponds, to bring them back, to bring them to the where we need to do for the province, they're extremely expensive. I can't remember the figure, but you're looking at major six-digit figures. Similarly, when we look at the expansion that is being proposed for the corner, I use this as an example, of for Albert Division Street for the new beach walk bill that is being proposed, then the idea is to reconstruct the corner. But with the new reconstruction of corner, with the new intersection lighting system that's available to meet the new AOTA standards with sound and the beeps and the like, in the old days, I would tell you we could do that for about $125,000, where now that same corner is somewhere between approximately $350,000. So I thought council did a great job in taking the projects that are before us. The other one, we discovered that we're going to have to do some strong mitigation strategies. We learned about the concern of Monk's Cove. Council immediately proceeded to design, but we were told in the short term, we're probably looking at a bill of $250,000 as a Band-Aid, but the true fix is closer to $2 million. Likewise, if we take our waterfront, again, I'm pleased many years ago that Coburg bought the waterfront. We own our waterfront. I believe we have one of the nicest waterfronts of any municipality in southern Ontario, especially on this side of the lake. We're very proud of what we've been able to do with our waterfront over many years since I've been here. As you remember, when it was coal piles and oil tanks and railway tracks. But with that being said, we know that our basin walls and our outer walls are deteriorating. And right now we know the bill that we've agreed to proceed this year, I think, is slightly over $5 million, ultimately knowing in the next 3 or 4 years, collectively, it's probably going to be 12 plus million dollars. So you're quite right. We have to ensure that as we move forward, we're dealing with the infrastructure needs of our community, dealing with the services that we wish to supply, and at the same time, trying to find that balance moving forward with our residents in terms of a tax levy.
Council raised transit fares for this upcoming year. You have also overhauled the transit system and how it functions. Why did council feel it was necessary to raise rates now during the pandemic when so many people are facing fiscal hardship or having fiscal troubles and so many other pressures in their lives? Why do it now?
Well, I mean, we can always argue, is there ever a right time? And I guess one of my first arguments is perhaps we waited far too long, because when I remember back, I don't think they were raised for 14 years. So when you consider that we have had enhanced increases for transit, whether it be for bus shelters, the purchasing of a bus, the paying for staffing, the maintenance costs, the signage, the list goes on. We did not increase for 14 years. And of course, when we didn't increase it for 14 years, no one said anything. And yet our costs were constantly going up to the point that we're now subsidizing transit well over $1 million. So at some point we had to then look at it fairly and say, whoa, we can't just keep $1 million, $1.5 million, because that's taxpayers' monies too. Again, so what we try to do is look at when we could do it. The fees went up groups in a very incremental fashion, I believe, for the next 3 years to 2023. And by doing this, we're hoping, based on ridership, that we'll be able to recover some of the costs that we have been putting out for a number of years. But more importantly, looking at, can we do transit differently? And that's why we brought in a pilot project for this year to review how well is this new transit model working on demand service, and to bring a report back this spring to council to really answer that question. Is it working as well as it does in other communities like Ukatooks and others that are going to on-demand service? It's forcing us to look at how we purchase buses and what kind of buses do we purchase, and can we use smaller type buses that may come in at slightly less cost? And at the same time this year, we incorporated what we call a reloadable smart card. So again, we're looking at all ways where we can enhance transit. But with that being said, if COVID continues and this goes on to a duration, then I give council credit, because council has made the exception to either minimize or stop the collection of fees for a certain period during COVID. We've done that at least on two occasions that I'm aware of, and we may have to do it a third time as well.
On a personal note, over the past year, what is one of the big takeaways for you, a lesson you're not going to forget?
Well, I think one of the biggest lessons I've learned, we went back 2 years ago to March 2020, and you asked me Delta or variant or Omicron or any of this language, I go, sorry, what are you talking about? So what I've learned from that is that that is now part of our daily business. It's something I've learned through our emergency control group that we meet certainly weekly and daily if need be. And we've been meeting consistently for the last 2 years to help make decisions where we can and if we can't. And again, those reports are certainly encouraged and taken to Cobra Council. And I think what I've learned more than anything in these very roller coaster challenging times for both individuals and families is the importance of collaboration, the importance of maintaining a positive attitude. And I know sometimes in England, I've not been to England, but I see people wear a shirt that often says be calm and something like be calm, but move ahead or move forward. And I think that's where we are as town of Cobourg. Remain calm, deal with what you need to deal with in a hopefully a very proactive manner, work as a team, and work towards resolution. So for me, in many fronts, I think that's been the biggest reward, sometimes the biggest challenge, but also the biggest reward.
This year, there is a municipal election. Have you made any decisions about running yet?
No, I have not. I actually took a few days off at Christmas. It was nice to have some downtime, even though it was just in the home environment. I didn't go too far. And that's perhaps a conversation I'll have in 2022 with my significant other. I know my dog will be in agreement because we're always in agreement. And then I'll have a chat with my children, who are adults, but I still respect their point of view.
Mayor Henderson, thank you so much for talking to me today.
Thank you, Robert, as always.
I want to thank my guests this week for talking to me, and I want to thank all the listeners for tuning in today. Please join me again next week when we will talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life and Northumberland County. So please tune in. If you would like to listen or share this or any podcast, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. There you will find past podcasts, news, and other information about life and politics in Northumberland County. Or you can go to the radio station's website at northumberland897.ca. I'm Robert Washburn. Thanks for taking time out of your day to listen in, and I hope over the week you will continue to consider this. Thank you for listening to this podcast from Consider This. If you have any comments or would like to suggest a story, please contact me at considerthisnorthumberland@gmail.com, or you can message me on Facebook at Consider This. If you enjoyed this podcast or are looking for more news and information about Northumberland County, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. That's consider-this.ca. And don't forget to share. And again, thank you for listening and stay tuned for more from Consider This.